Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome, everybody, to the first ever live Predictable Revenue Podcast. I want to thank everybody for tuning in live and for those that turn and those for who are turning in later. We have a special guest today, and I think it's going to be really fun. I'll introduce her in just a second. First, I'm your co-host, Colin Stewart. I'm joined by my co-host and co-founder and author of Predictable Revenue, Mr. Aaron Ross. And here's why. I never actually thought we'd have this guest or a guest like this on the show. And here's why. She's not a full-time salesperson. She's an email conversion engineer who usually spends her time helping SaaS companies convert more free trials into paying customers. So did I get that right, Laura? Close enough?
Yep, you're good.
Perfect. Everybody, this is Laura Lopich. Laura Lopich, this is everybody.
Hi, everybody. Do you want me to take it away, Colin?
Yeah, maybe just I'll cue it up just a little bit as to why you're on the call and I guess how we first met, which was basically, I mean, you're here to share your perspective, like a copywriter's perspective on cold email. I think I saw one of your articles from Joe at Copy Hackers, and you wrote a great article that we'll link to in the show notes. But what really impressed me was your numbers. So you sent 328 emails. You had a 56% open rate, a 9% positive response rate, and $20,000 in closed deals, or one $20,000 closed deal, which I'm sure more probably came out of that, but just those numbers alone, batting pretty good.
Yep.
So today we're going to talk about Laura's non-salesperson's guide to, you got a bit of a framework for writing cold emails that convert.
Yes. Cool. And I'm excited to share those with you guys.
All right. Let me hand it over to you then.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. So I do have some slides to share with you guys. So let me pull those up real quick.
And if you're listening via audio, we're going to send a link to these. We'll upload them and put a link to these in the show notes so you can check that out.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. Alrighty. So again, I'm Laura and I'm a email conversion engineer and copywriter. I help startups and SaaS companies win more leads with cold emails and convert their trial users to paying customers. So who am I to talk about cold email? 1400%, thank you. In roughly 4 months using cold emails alone, that was my entire marketing strategy. So today Colin asked me here to take you through my proven 6-step formula that you've got to use so you can tap into cold emails killer growth like I did. You know, the growth that you hear about but haven't actually ever seen, a lot like Sasquatch. It's out there somewhere, but you haven't really seen it. So here are the 6 steps to writing a high converting cold email. First of all, who am I emailing? Why should they care about me? So what? Prove it to them, how I can solve your problem, and then your call to action. Maybe you're wondering, how do I know the answers to all those questions? Because there's a lot of questions and I have no idea where to start. Research. Research is the key. You got to know who you're targeting in your cold emails before you can even start writing them. So, number one, research. Who am I emailing? To answer this question, you need to figure out who you're emailing. Find that job title, find the name of the person, figure out what their business goals are, what kind of wins their company has had that you can tie into what you can help with, your offer. So one big question before we go further that I get all the time is like, how much time do I actually need to spend on researching? Because I don't have like a full day to just devote to researching my cold email recipient, because that would be one day per email, and I don't have that kind of time. So don't panic. You only need to spend as much time on your research as you need to. So let me show you my process that got me that 56% open rate on my cold emails. This is also the process I use with all my clients. So I figure out who I'm emailing, and it depends on the size of the company. For companies with 10 employees or less, I email the CEO. He's the decision maker, or she's the decision maker. Otherwise, I'm looking for the person I would likely be working with to complete my project. In my case, as a copywriter, that's the marketing manager, or maybe the content manager. Maybe in your case, that's a little bit different. You're also looking to research their job title, obviously their name, and also figure out what their business goals are. For example, what kind of wins has their company had that you can tie your offer into those big wins or their upcoming news, like a big launch. And then you're trying to figure out how you dovetail your offer into their business goals or company wins. That's your introduction. That's your window into their mind, which is exactly what you want when you're writing a cold email, because being relevant to your cold email reader is vital. Think about how many.
Sure. Sorry, Laura. Can you give us a couple examples of, maybe some of those intro lines that you've done yourself, just to help kind of connect the dots in our heads here?
Yeah, no problem. Great question. So what I found was everybody loves a compliment, honestly. I use compliments all the time as my intro lines. So I would compliment them on a recent win that they would have in their business. For example, like, congrats about your, newest Apple smartphone launch that I read about on TechCrunch, or congrats on your recent talk at this conference. I caught a glimpse of it on, someone's website. And then reference, be specific when you compliment, so it doesn't make you look like a stalker. And so it gives you credibility in saying, I researched you. I know about the stuff, the cool stuff that you're doing. And here are these spots that I read about you on the web. Everybody likes a compliment, but be specific and try to cite those sources that you're getting your information from. That way you don't look creepy.
Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, I like your website, or something generic like that.
Yeah, exactly. Another one I use a lot is when I'm emailing, say, a blogger or something for an interview, I'll say, hey, I really enjoyed your post on da 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 da, and then try and compliment them on a specific thing that I took out of that post. That also works really well.
Great. Thanks for those.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Okay, so going back, being relevant to your cold email reader is extremely vital. Think about how many emails you delete every day from your inbox. I'd guess 99% of them get deleted because you don't care about them. You don't want your cold email to be part of that 99%. So here's an example of an actual cold email that I wrote that got a response the very same day. So you can see my subject line, TechCrunch story. These guys, Gigster, just launched and I read about them in TechCrunch. So I referenced that specific relevant part in my subject. And then I referenced it again in the very first line. So this is a really good example of what we were just talking about on being specific and giving a compliment. And then if you go a little bit further down, it says, I was checking out Gigster's website and noticed you don't have any customer success stories. Here's more relevance to my cold email reader. They probably know that customer success stories are very important in a launch, especially when you're building that trust factor when attracting new customers. I'm citing my research right here. I was checking your website out and noticed this. Okay. Now we're moving on to the next two questions. So what and why should they care about me? So what means why they should care about what you're offering? So you want to link your offer to their business goals, which you've uncovered in your research. Those business goals, again, can be external things like a launch or recent news. They can also be a little bit more emotional, which are looking good to their boss, winning more customers, growing their business, decreasing expenses. So why should they care about me? Explain what you do in terms of their business goals, not just simple, I'm a freelance writer. That doesn't really explain how I help your business grow. So for example, for me, I help SaaS companies convert more trial users to paying customers through emails. See how the focus is squarely on my cold email recipient and what's in it for them? So when you're first starting out and sending cold emails, you won't be working from a template probably. Or maybe you're working from another template like mine, and I'll give you the link to those at the end. But you always, always need to test your cold email and tweak it to your audience. What works for my audience, SaaS companies and startups, might not work for your audience, which might be like financial advisors, bloggers, SEO companies, fill in the blank.
Yeah, I like this point here because I think it's way too easy when you're sitting down, whether you're working for a tech company, a services company, hard goods, you know the product so well, right? You've just spent, especially if you're a new sales rep, you've just spent 3 months learning absolutely everything you can down to the nitty gritty detail, all the like the specs about this particular product. And so then you're like, okay, I'm gonna write a cold email, and I want to tell people about all these cool features and benefits and specifications. But I think what you're saying is that's not the right way. We want to translate that into, this is how those features and specs can help your business. Is that close?
Exactly. You, like, Colin hit it right on the head. You know, we haven't even started talking about why I'm emailing them, we haven't even mentioned ourselves. Like, this is honestly the first time that we've mentioned us, like what we do. So if you keep that focus squarely on your reader and what they get out of it, it sets you apart from the rest of those awful cold emails that are very salesy and full of like that jargon that you have. You might open up a cold email and you're like, I don't even know what this person's selling me or what they're talking about. Delete. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So what comes next? So we've got sort of the meat of, you know, so what? What's the next piece there?
So a lot of times, like, I'll hear, you know, like, how, that's great, you have a template, but how do I create a template? How do I start? How do I even like make a template from scratch? So you need to let the research that you've uncovered dictate what you're putting in your email. That's the only time that you're going to figure out what matters to your cold email recipient. Start with the reader, answer that so what, and then you can introduce the why should they even care about me? And then, so maybe you're thinking like, okay, this sounds like a lot of information that I'm trying to pack into this tight little email that should only be like 3 or 5 sentences long, because I've heard a lot of people say to me, a cold email should be short. Why are you telling me to put all this stuff into a cold email? That's the big topic, right? How long should your cold email actually be? Mm-hmm. So what I found is it should be long enough to convince your cold email reader that they A, need what you're offering, and B, that you're the right person for the job. So you need an email that gives you enough space to bridge that gap between your cold email reader thinking, okay, who are you? And, I might be interested. You need to warm them up a little bit. And that's really hard to do with a 5-sentence email. Like, the cold emails I sent out to launch my business had at least 10 sentences. That's double. So how do you warm them up?
Someone said, by the way, there's no long copy, just boring copy.
Exactly. And that boring copy ties directly back into being relevant to your cold email. Nobody's ever going to find something boring that's relevant to their life and their situation and their job and their company. They're going to find it very, very interesting. So warming them up in an email, you do that with the research. You do that with being relevant. You mention where you found them, what you stumbled across, recent company news, like saw your launch, or congrats on your partnership with X company. So what if they're not like on TechCrunch? What if they're like a company and you can't find any recent news? So what you do is you look for a mutual connection or common ground. Search their Twitter feed or their LinkedIn page or their company blog or maybe their personal blog. You're looking for publicly available information where you can find that connection. Like, for example, you're both LA Dodgers fans and know, oh, hey, they're rocking the World Series right now. It doesn't have to be a lot. It can just be a little. Okay. So moving on, number four, the fourth step is prove it to them. And then number five is how you can solve their problem. So prove it. Prove it that their solution will help them. You need to give some data on why, how your solution gets them their business goal. And it doesn't have to be long. For example, I might include like a quick stat on how my cold emails had a 9% positive reply rate. Or you can include case studies from your past clients, link to a result you've gotten for a past client, or research on how your offer typically helps companies. And then next step, how you solve that problem, you just tell them. And when you do that, offer them a little bit of value. So what do I mean by that? Give them a taste of what you're offering. Okay, this is a little bit of a weird concept, but think back to high school. The popular girls nailed this one. A hint of a shoulder, a long sideways glance, a skirt accidentally hiked a little higher. They're not giving away all the goods. They're just giving you a taste of what you could have. So you want to do this for your cold email recipient. Help them take a baby step in the right direction. Doing this proves that you know what you're talking about and that you're a professional. Here's an example. Okay, so here is what I'm talking about. It says, with your new launch and need to build trust and growth, I imagine you have tons of great stories to tell that showcase the impressive results you've helped your clients achieve. For example, the testimonials by, and I changed the names here, so give me a little leeway.
I was going to say.
So, for example, the testimonials by, you know, Charles Dickens and Jane Eyre would be perfect ones to flesh out into two-page case studies. Okay, now here's the prove it part. As you may know, research has shown that a two-page case study is one of the most effective content marketing methods to generate leads. Now I'm giving them an idea of where they can use these in their marketing. You can use it to convert leads like in new client packets, on your website, attached to a follow-up email, and then a little bit more of the prove it at the end, proving that you've done this for other clients. You've done this before. This is not your first rodeo. You know, I helped a travel products company boost awareness with a case study. You can check it out here and then just put a little link.
Cool. I love it. Question for you and for Aaron. How do you feel about attaching some tangible numbers in here? Let's start with Aaron and then we'll come back to Laura.
Well, any kind of concrete details you can use always help. So for example, let's just take the second half of the first paragraph where the line says, for example, the testimonials by Charles Dickens and Jane Eyre, blah, 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 or even says two-page case studies. The way we work is too, the details like stick a lot more than if you said testimonials would be perfect to add to your site. So numbers, yeah, for sure. Any kind of detail, whether numbers just easier usually, or specific names. For example, you know, saying we have 100 customers. Okay. We have 100 customers, including ones like A, B, and C. It's better.
I definitely agree. And also, when you're citing specific testimonials like this one, I cited specific ones that they had on their website. It gives you more credibility. It's that research and that relevance aspect as well. And saying a specific number makes it feel more real and more tangible and less daunting in your cold emails prospect's head. It's not a 20-page case study. It's two pages. That's not a lot. It's very easy to do.
Totally. I'll add one thing from a technical angle. Be careful to stay away from the word free, Viagra, and dollar signs. There's a bunch of other phrases. And if I can find the post, I'll link it to you in the show notes here. But there's just a ton of sort of trigger words that spam filters look for. that if you include, say, free in the subject line, or if you put, you know, a dollar sign in the, you know, in one of your, you know, when you're talking about, you know, we helped a customer, you know, produce $1 million in revenue, and you've got the dollar sign there. It's one of the things that certain spam filters look for and can sort of, it won't immediately put you into the spam filter, but it can escalate your email in terms of how risky the email system thinks it is.
That's a great point.
Cool.
Okay.
So we've got the proof. This is a great example. So what's our next step, Laura?
Actually, before we move on to the next step, I just want to point out real quick, if you look at this example, you will see that there's no marketing jargon. It's human speak, and it ties directly into my cold email reader's business goals. So that's another thing that you would like to do with this prove it part. Try to refrain from tapping into all that jargon that you might have learned about your product and go back to the basics. Try to think of it in terms of how would you explain it, maybe to your mom. Keep it simple. Okay, so for the last section, which is step number 6 and the call to action. So your call to action should be tied directly into what's the next step you want them to take, the immediate next step, that tiny little step in the right direction. So your call to action should be clear, concise, easy to take. It shouldn't feel like there's going to be a ton of work. It should feel like the natural next step to bring them what they want. And think about it as this is their first step, very small first step in a long journey towards you guys working together. This isn't like you don't expect to get married on your first date. So don't expect them to sign a huge contract with you right away. That's not it. Or order like a ton of your product, or, you know, you guys aren't getting married right here. You just need them to take one little step towards that big end goal of working together. For example, when are you available to hop on a quick 15-minute call to talk about how we can achieve this business goal? And then you would just insert, you know, whatever business goal it is that you've uncovered in your research.
Gotcha. So you wouldn't actually say to achieve this business goal. You
would actually
write it out.
Yep, exactly.
And you would never propose over email? No? No
proposal? No.
You're a copywriter. Come on, Laura.
I know, right? Go for the
big
quote.
Someone's done it.
Yeah, dear future husband.
I'm sure that works on The Bachelor and stuff, but not in cold email.
That's too bad. Could have been an interesting pivot for Aaron's next book.
Predictable marriage.
So the big important thing to note about your call to action is assume they're going to say yes. Just assume it. Don't, I know it sounds scary and it feels presumptuous and it might give you like a little bit of heart palpitations, but it does work. It really does work when you say, when are you available? Not could we possibly, maybe, could we maybe chat like maybe next Tuesday? No.
Yeah. Don't use that up high voice. You want to use your lower down voice. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, use your boss voice.
Perfect. And do you have a couple more examples you can share of like calls to action?
I don't right now. The one that I used with great success was exactly that one that I just mentioned. When are you available to hop on a quick 15-minute phone call to talk about how we can possibly work together, or, you know, whatever that business goal was that I figured out for the cold email recipient.
Or a bad example is people who write, let me know if I can help.
Yes.
Or
here's my Calendly.
Yes, that's another thing.
Here's my Calendly link. It's like you're assuming that I'm going to say yes. It's a little bit too far into the boss voice, I think.
Exactly. Like you don't want to give them your calendar link. You need to guide the relationship. And all you're looking for is that tiny little like email back that says, yes, that's all you need. And then you can send them the calendar link and then you can book the meeting. But going straight for the jugular right there, not a good idea.
So right now you're just, go ahead.
To reiterate that the goal of these emails is not to sell someone, it's just to get a response.
Exactly.
And in this case, a simpler step there.
Yeah. In this case, you're not even trying to book a meeting. You're just trying to see if they're interested in a meeting at some point in the future.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be, they could email me back and say, I'm going on vacation to Europe for a month. Email me when I get back on this date. I'd be like, cool, I'll email you then. That's all that I need. I just want a response. Okay. So those were the six steps in writing a cold email that converts. Colin has this slide deck and I think he might be sending it out to you guys. I'm not sure.
Yep.
So a good question. And by the way, Dave threw it in here, but so there's the first, you send one email, but what about a second or of example, he actually asks here, of the 328 you sent, how many actual people, like individuals, did you send them to? Actually had a second part here. And how often, what was a typical time someone would respond? Within a day or longer or shorter?
Okay. So the response time varied. It would depend on whether or not they were at their desk, and I tested the timing, like when I actually sent emails, time of day, date of week, you know, day of the week and everything. So sometimes depending on that person's schedule, some of us like to batch our emails and others reply to them throughout the day. If that's super hard to know when you're cold emailing someone. Usually
it seems like usually if they don't come within 24 hours, they're probably not going to come. But what was your experience?
That's usually true. Although I did send quite a lot of follow-up emails, which is something, another topic for another time. But I think you should send follow-up emails. It shows that you're serious about the email. And I got a lot of positive replies off of just follow-ups. I did get replies off of the straight cold email. Yeah, that's true. But I also got replies off the follow-ups. And I would usually send those a day or two later.
How many follow-ups were you sending?
That's a really good question. I haven't broken the numbers down that granular.
Just roughly, like for one person, you would send them one follow-up, five follow-ups, 100 follow-ups.
I would send up to five follow-ups. I did occasionally send up to seven, just based on gut that they really needed what I was offering. And based on my analytics that they were actually opening my emails and they weren't just going into the void, and maybe they just needed a longer runway to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. I'm going to ask everybody at this stage to take a couple minutes and look down at the Q&A button at the bottom of the screen. Unless, of course, you're walking along listening to the podcast that you've downloaded, you can't see the screen or interact with us because, you know, it's like 3 weeks, 4 weeks later. But if you are here live, click on that Q&A button and would love to hear or see your questions in there. It's much easier than putting them into the chat. If you put them in here, it's more likely that they won't get lost and they will actually get answered. So we've got Joe. Oh man, I'm going to butcher your last name, so I apologize. Fasciolo. I'm sorry for that. But what kind of probing question would you use in a non-descriptive response, like not interested?
So in other words, what would I reply back to a not interested reply to my cold email? Is that what you're asking?
I think that's what he's looking for.
I would ask, that's a really good question. I'm thinking about it.
I think what we see is a lot of people, they think that no, not interested, no thanks is like an automatic no, done forever. You know, you're a terrible company and we never want to hear from you again. And I think that's a common misconception. It's not a no forever. It's just a, maybe I didn't understand your copy. Maybe I didn't even read the email. Maybe it's not a good time right now. So it's not really, I don't have a really great response for you. But maybe Laura's thought of something by now.
Thanks for giving me some space. I would try back a couple different replies if you're getting a couple responses like that. And one of those replies that I would try is, why is that? or just phrase it like, just curious, why is that? And see, maybe they'll tell you, like, it's not a great time. We've already got someone on staff who handles that. But that will give you some insight, and that will give you a little bit more research to guide your further cold email. Or you could even ask, like, thanks for your response. Is it okay if I follow up with you in a month?
Mm-hmm. Aaron, I know you call it, is it squirrel feeding? I know we've used this when we get people that say, oh, I'm not interested. But can you maybe talk a little bit about how you sort of, you've got these little questions that you can string people along with, use that to reignite?
Well, in the same vein of, you know, if you don't understand why they're not interested, you don't really know what to do. So the idea would be, again, if you think it's a relevant person, a relevant company, because you can get responses from people who are, you know, there's really no point to follow up with them. But then is there some way you can try to ask for some information that helps give you a better sense of why they're not interested? So like what Laura mentioned. So you could ask, you know, why is that? Or you could ask that a version of that, but give them plant a seed or give them a start. So again, like a simple question that's easy to answer. The easier it is to answer, the more likely they're going to answer it. If you sell sales-related apps, right? You could ask, "Hey, great, you know, or thanks. May I ask why you're not interested? Or, you know, we only work with companies over 25 salespeople." You can sort of like throw like a very simple qualification question there or a conversation starter. Or you might ask, is that because you guys don't have budget or you don't have this problem or you don't have, like in copywriting, ask, do you mind if I ask, is that because you use an outside agency already? So you're sort of planting a seed that helps them, their mind go a little bit further towards answering you. I guess is the best way to describe it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, most, like sometimes you might turn it around. Like sometimes people do get confused and you respond to them like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you did something different. But I don't think you can't, if you try to put too much energy into turning negative or neutral responses around, it's a pretty low, like once you get your emails working, which is a separate topic, but it's not, people obsess over someone said no, how do I change their mind? It's like, well, usually you can't. So it's a lot. Don't be sure that you're not over investing in trying to change people's minds versus trying to find new people whose minds don't need to be changed.
Perfect. Thanks, Aaron. Okay, we've got 9 more questions here. Tommy is asking, what system are you using to send that, Laura?
I was using straight up Gmail, and then I got the Streak install. It's a free install for Gmail, and it gives you insight into who is opening your emails, and it's also got a CRM built into it so you can manage all of those cold emails going out. Mm-hmm. And before we go any further, I just wanted to mention, I did mention earlier, you could get one of my templates, my cold email templates. If you go to bit.ly/2cold templates, that's where they'll be at.
Templates or templates?
Templates. I don't know. Perfect. Templates.
So bit.ly/2 cold templates.
Yep, that's it.
Cool. And Tommy, if you're looking for email tool help, shoot me an email, colin@predictablerevenue.com. I can help point you in the direction of a couple ones that we've used in the past and some that I know work really well. All right.
Let me just cover a simple one. Greg asked, is it better to include a link to and ask like a case study or attach the case study itself? And yeah, no attachments, at least in getting these initial emails. So you want to just use links, not attachments. And even the link, ideally links to more of like a blog post format or simple video, not, sometimes you get a link and it goes to like a PDF on the web. And you know, if someone's on their phone, it's just really hard to read because you got to zoom in. And so you want to do more of like a link to a easy to read or easy to view asset. Sort of a video blog post type of thing.
Totally. And no bit.ly links, no URL shorteners. They will, they're another thing that will, it's fine. It's fine here, Laura. We're not judging you, but I wouldn't email one out because it's another thing that's, it's been abused by a lot of spammers to trick you into clicking a different link. So it's a big no-no to shorten your links.
Actually, but Tommy had another one. Where'd you get your list?
My list? I made it myself.
Searching online and...
Yep. Created it myself, going after the companies that I wanted to work with, who I thought were doing cool stuff.
And then, all right, you find a company. Do you, follow-up question, like, actually, mind, did you use a tool, plug-in, or just how'd you get their name, contact information, and email address?
Good question. I used a variety of sources. You can use Google.
There's a trillion options now.
Yeah, there are. Back when I was doing this a couple of years ago, I relied a lot on Reportive, which I think is now bought out by LinkedIn, maybe.
Yeah, their plugin is now dead.
Yeah, unfortunately. It was a good one. But now you can use like Hunter.io or any mail finder, I think is another one. Mm-hmm. You can also use LinkedIn in a kind of backdoor kind of way to get them if you're connected with them.
Yeah. If you're on LinkedIn, LeadIQ is pretty helpful. We use that here. We actually had Ryan O'Hara from LeadIQ on the podcast about a couple months ago. Great episode on personalizing. And he's got some great 80s content and funny content, you know, for your emails.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you Google something like grab emails off LinkedIn, you'll probably there's probably 100 apps that do it now. Mm-hmm. So.
Cool. So Abdullah's got a question. How do you leverage content and follow-up emails? Or do we leverage content and follow-up emails? If yes, how would you tailor it to the recipients in the list?
In my follow-up emails, I didn't. I kept my follow-up email very short, very sweet. Very simple and easy to answer. It was usually one line, maybe two, and mm-hmm. it was a very easy to answer question like, when are you available? Usually a repeat of my call to action. Mm-hmm.
One thing that we try here is we've got sort of three types of follow-ups that we like to send. So one is the bumper email or, you know, short question, you know, does this time work for you? Things like that. The second is the content-based email. So, hey, you know, I came across this case study, thought you might be interested. And then the third one, I'm totally drawing a blank on. Basically, it's the breakup email. It's the last email in the sequence where you're saying, hey, I've emailed you a couple of times. This is going to be my last time. Is it because, and some people take this, you know, you might have seen the Hippo email or, you know, I think Aaron might have included this one in predictable revenue. And I know a couple years ago, you couldn't get a cold email without having this attached, but it was like, are you one, not interested, two, just too busy right now, or three, trapped in your office because a hippo has come into your office or a crocodile, a tiger, something hilarious, and you need me to call PETA or animal control, right? So it's kind of funny. That one's been used a lot, but the breakup email, just letting people know, hey, is it, you know, you're not interested, or is it bad timing, or something humorous? I'm a huge fan of bad puns. So if I can work one in, I will. But that's my personal style. Cool. Anders, how much time should we let pass before sending the next follow-up? And what wording would we use? So kind of a follow-on to this question. Laura, I think you said you were going at least a day, maybe 2 days between follow-ups.
Yeah, at least 2 days, unless it fell like on a Friday. I didn't really like to email on Mondays. Everybody mm-hmm. hates their job on Mondays. And I also didn't like to email on Fridays because people tend to skip out a little bit early on Fridays. So you don't know if they're getting your email and then it falls on that Monday. So I would try to squeeze it into that Tuesday through Thursday and make the adjustments as needed.
Great. Big fans. I know, I'm trying to think, it's not right, Kit. There's, we've had a couple people on the show too. If you, Anders, if you email me there, I'll shoot you a link to a couple of podcasts that we have where people have gone really specific into the episodes. It's, you know, the one you need to look at is John Parisi from GuideSpark. And it's probably an hour and a quarter episode podcast that we did probably about 2 months ago. And he shares his whole SDR playbook there. So you can see everything. Perfect. Michelle is looking for 100.io. It's hunter.io, as in like hunting for email addresses. My cousin, Paul Stewart, not my cousin, but you know, a fellow sales guy here in Vancouver, is wondering if the best point of contact is still performing these days. Yeah, it still works. It's a subject line that we use, but we've probably got, I don't know, 15. I was just looking at a document a few minutes ago. We probably have about 15, 20 that we sort of cycle through, and we've got sort of three different ways of building campaigns. So it really depends on if we're on the type of campaign that we're building. And really at a high level, is this a niche focused campaign? Is this a persona focused campaign, or is this a use case focused campaign? So what sort of style are we using? We'll sort of indicate which subject lines we're likely to use. And we've got an R. Darrow is wondering, how do we, would we approach professionals in a B2C setting the same way? So I'm wondering, are you trying to sell to, is this professionals that sell B2C, or is this, are you trying to sell like to independent contractors like Laura? Maybe we'll come back to that one, but if you could add to your answer in the Q&A, that would be super helpful. Greg's got another question here. How do you incorporate phone calls? How many and when? Laura, did you make any phone calls?
No, I hate the phone. So no phone calls for me.
we'll change your mind at some point.
There you go.
Yeah. I can just hear, if Mike Stankus is ever listening to this, he's just going to be shaking his head. Mike's the VP of sales over at Acquia. He had a great episode on why you should be using the phone, yeah. But I'll let Aaron answer this one.
No, I mean, I even have, clients who knock on doors, old school. Not that many, but sometimes it makes sense. Phone calls, there's no magic number, but we do see a lot better results when you're using the phone in addition to email. Yeah. But it takes, it takes practice, confidence. A lot of people just aren't comfortable. So when you sound like you are comfortable and confident and you're relaxed, it works well. Your tone has a big impact on it. So it just takes some practice and some technique, but they do usually help. But there's not you just sort of mix them in, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
One of the clients that we worked with it was Ryan over there, Ryan Donahue and Agility Health. They doubled the results of their campaign just by, as soon as one of their reps saw an email, as soon as they saw the response, they weren't allowed to respond to it until they had tried phoning them at least once. And so they'd call them, they'd try and get through. And then if that didn't work, they'd actually call into a mapping call, go to their receptionist or whatnot, and then try and work their way in that way. And that doubled, if not more, their results.
Yep.
On the follow-up, sort of, Dave asked, do phone calls detract from the emails? No, they sort of layer on top of each other. Even if you're going right to voicemail, what we have our guys do is just say, hey, this is Colin. I just left you voicemail. I'd love it if you get back to me there. And what we're finding is we're not getting people that are responding to that. They're calling us back, but we find that we're seeing responses that are like, hey, I just got your voicemail. Right. So it's a voicemail that's prompting them to go look at the cold email that we've sent. All right. Let's see. We've got, cool. So we've got, let's take one more question here. So I think our Darrow was asking about professionals that would be insurance, that provide insurance services, CPAs, wealth managers, lawyers. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. We have ran some campaigns focusing on lawyers, mixed results. Some are very, one of the campaigns was with a software company that was, providing a ton of value, and the lawyers were like, oh my God, thank you so much for reaching out. This is amazing. I know a couple of friends that have built businesses where they're just cold emailing lawyers. We've had some others where it was non-differentiated, trying to sell non-differentiated services to lawyers. And the response was, as it would be to any subgroup, not as great. Aaron, anything to add there?
Yeah, it always helps when you have some way to differentiate yourself and stand out from the crowd of not only people who sound like you, sort of all the emails, but also people who just sound like you. Mm-hmm. So your readers' eyes just glaze over when they get a bunch of stuff that looks the same.
Mm-hmm. I think the question, we get this all the time, talking to new companies that are, new to predictable revenue. I think the most common question is, will this work for me? Will this work for my product? Will it work for my audience? And I think, you know, the answer is generally, you know, it works for most, you know, for most companies that are B2B. And even if, you know, selling to lawyers and that, those are still businesses. Where it doesn't work is when, you know, the product is a challenging sell, right? When you're not a need to have, you're kind of a nice to have, the hair isn't on fire. So it makes it harder. If their hair is on fire and you can solve them with that, cold email is a great tool. You're going to get great response rates. If you have a challenging product to sell that you really need to be not a challenging product, not a complex sale, but like a really tough sale, you know, not very differentiated, you're going to have a much tougher time over email because like Aaron said, there's going to be 10 other people sending your prospects the exact same email every day. Perfect. Well, I think that's all the time we have today. I want to thank everybody for joining, and so many of you hung around. So thank you so much. I'm curious, Laura, if anybody would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
You can send me an email, actually. Perfect. All right. My email is Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at lauralopuch.com. And that's LauraLopuch.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks, guys, for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks so much for coming on today. If you're looking for Aaron, he's on Twitter at MotoCEO. And I'm at ColinYVR. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your comments, any suggestions you have, or guests that you'd like to have on the podcast. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody. Thanks, Laura, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, guys.